Hi, welcome to the Barry Nation podcast, where we support the bariatric community with humor, humility, and honesty. I'm April.
I'm Jason.
I'm Natalie.
And if you're watching this, you already know the amazing Dr. Eric Smith is joining us today. Hi, Dr. Smith.
Hey, how are you guys?
We are so excited to talk to you about this topic. It's been on our minds for a long time. And when we knew that this was going to be our support theme for February 2023, you were the first person we wanted to talk to because you were really the one that helped us understand obesity from a disease perspective and obesity from a lifelong treatment perspective. So if you know, if you've read the title of this podcast, you know we are going to be talking about why surgery is not going to be enough for us to find and maintain our healthy, happy weight. As patients, a lot of us went into this thinking that, oh, we were just going to have our stomachs cut out, or we were going to get replumbed, rerouted, we were going to stop eating so much, lose a bunch of weight, and boom, it was going to be magical. And then about, what, 6, 7, 8, 9 months, we all slammed into a brick wall. Our lives fell apart. We hated everything about it. And we realized, oh, my God, surgery is not enough.
Right. And then all those voices around you that questioned your decisions, like, told you so.
Oh, don't even get me started about the
Yeah.
Right. And it's not only like all of the people that were kind of, you know, rooting against you are saying these things now, but internally, right, your imposter syndrome comes out, that self-fulfilling prophecy comes out. You start thinking like, oh, my God, I really can't do this. What was I thinking? And then you look for all of the evidence that proves that you can't do this, right? The little bump right. in the scale, or, oh, the cravings are back, or, oh, right. You just start noticing every little thing. And it just kicks you right back to the mindset and the person that you were before surgery, the person that was questioning and fearful and wondering.
Are you having bariatric or revision surgery related to other weight loss procedures and feeling nervous about the post-surgical pain management? Check out yourxfactor.com to learn more about steps to take to prepare yourself both physically and mentally for your surgery.
So the goal of our conversation today is to acknowledge surgery will not be enough. Full stop. And Dr. Smith is going to help us understand why surgery will not be enough, why it was never designed to be enough, and how the disease of obesity is really going to shape the rest of our lives, right? If we can become educated about this, if we can approach our obesity treatment with all of the education and the knowledge and the resources that we will need as patients, we will find and maintain our happy, healthy weight with all of the treatments that we need to be successful.
Right.
Yeah. So before we dive in, Dr. Smith, will you introduce yourself to people that maybe don't know you?
Sure. I am Eric Smith, and I am a bariatric surgeon in Georgetown, Kentucky. So I'm just outside of Lexington, Kentucky. Most people know where that is. When I say Georgetown, they think I'm in DC. Oh, yeah. I'm in Lexington, Kentucky. I've been in practice since 2006. I've been in Georgetown since 2013, so almost 10 years. And I am the medical director of our bariatric program there at our hospital, as well as the medical director of robotics and bariatrics for all of LifePoint Health, which is a national health network throughout the country. So I'm a robotic surgeon. We do all our bariatric surgeries robotically. I do all procedures, bypass, sleeve, SADI, revisions, as well as we have medical weight loss too. For the longest time, we've had to limit it a little bit for just our bariatric surgery patients because of, you know, manpower. And we are getting ready to be able to relaunch our medical weight loss to patients who've not had surgery, may hopefully never need to have surgery as well. So that's some stuff that we'll be rolling out, and maybe we'll share that with you guys too. In the very soon coming news that we'll be talking about. We got a lot of exciting things. And we just launched the Kentucky Bariatric Institute, yep. which is still our practice of Georgetown Bariatrics and Advanced Surgical Services, but we've now made it more encompassing and able to offer bariatric surgery to not only our communities, but statewide and even outside of statewide. And it's kind of interesting that this is our topic because we've been talking about this for a long time based on patients wanting this from us. And I said the only way we would do it is if, I don't care if you're coming from Cleveland, Ohio, or just outside of Lexington, you have to be able to have the exact same follow-up care. Not only lab checks and checks with our providers, but support. You can't have surgery and send someone on their way with a little manual that says, just follow this manual, eat this number of calories, no matter what changes in your life and no matter what happens in your life, and all will be well.
And so 1200 calories and 60 ounces of water is not going to do
it.
That's not the blueprint.
You know, I think when you talk about, without getting overly specific, when you talk about tribal medicine, we'll say, it's not always a knock on the person doing the procedure. You know, there's lots of good surgeons everywhere. There's lots of subpar surgeons everywhere. It's, are you getting a lifelong comprehensive program that is directly correlated and connected to your surgeon? And if that's happening, great, have it wherever you want. But if that's not happening, even if it's in your own town, that's not where you should go. And that thing, hopefully after tonight, people will understand that.
Hi friends, it's April. We are so excited to officially announce that ProCare Health is the official vitamin of Berry Nation. We were introduced to ProCare Health at the first Bariatric Society retreat in San Diego, and we have all fallen in love with our product and with the people behind the company. Jason, Natalie, and I have all made the switch to ProCare Health daily bariatric multivitamins, and we are seeing huge results. We invite you to check out ProCare Health by visiting them online at www.procarenow.com and use the code BERRYNATION for 10% off your order. And you guys, this even applies to vitamin subscriptions. Subscription services. So if you want your vitamins delivered every month or every 90 days, that 10% off is going to apply to that subscription. See what I mean about patient forward, patient centered? ProCare is amazing, and we are so excited to be partnered with them. Welcome to the Berry Nation family, ProCare Health.
Right, that continuity of care and acknowledging that surgery is like your first treatment. And after surgery, you have so many more other treatments that you will need to onboard throughout the rest of your life to be successful. And I think I can speak for the three of us. We went into surgery thinking that that was going to be pretty much the only thing that we needed. And the reason that we're all on this screen together is because we very quickly realized, oh my gosh, it is not at all what I need for the rest of my life. It was the tool that got me in the door. Now I have to shop from all of these things that are available.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and it doesn't make you a failure or mean that you did something wrong because you need those additional treatments. The majority of us, I mean, there may be a small amount that can make it through just having the surgery and doing the things and just not, you know, knuckling down and going on. High five to you guys. The majority of us will need adjunct treatment, and that's okay too. We're high fiving everybody in the circle here. You make it through without it, awesome. You don't make it through without it, cool. You make it through needing half of it, dope. Like everybody gets celebrated around here. Like we're that, but that's what people need to realize, is that it's not a knock on you for not making it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, you know, we can kind of just break through the shell of the topic of conversation and say, if we all agree that obesity and morbid obesity is a disease, and if we've still got people that argue that, man, that's a whole nother talk show. We don't have enough time tonight to talk about that. I mean, you know, that's they completely missed the boat. But hey, I'm willing to have that conversation. Excuse me, because maybe they've been misinformed or they've not been educated. So we all agree on that. Most people agree on that. Mm-hmm. The big question becomes, is it a self-inflicted disease, right? You know, okay, it's a disease, but you did this to yourself. And so the first question I always pose to people is, I say, well, let's look at it this way. Name me one of our major diseases that we deal with, the majority of them, that there's not some form of behavior or lack thereof that did not influence the severity of it. And I'll tell you a really quick story. I had a patient who had an insurance that had to go through 6 months of weigh-ins before their insurance would approve their surgery. So that's another talk show too, but they were on their last month. a surgeon, a primary care provider who had sent patients to us many, many times. And I get the note, the letter back, and my insurance coordinator hands it to me. And she says, I'm going to need you to read this. And it.
Okay, hear me out. I went into surgery thinking it would be the only treatment I would need to overcome my chronic disease of obesity. About 6 months into my journey, I realized I was wrong. I was missing community, I was missing education from the experts, and I was missing a safe place to just go and connect with other patients who understood what I was going through. That's why Jason, Natalie, and I created the Berry Nation membership community. It is a safe and inclusive place for patients to gather with one another, to learn from the experts and each other. Check out the Berry Nation community today by visiting https://berrynation.mn.co to see what we have created. In Berry Nation, you belong, and you don't have to do this journey alone.
Basically said, I think patient would benefit greatly from bariatric surgery because of X, Y, and Z, and diabetes was one of the big ones. And it says, however, patient has gained 8 pounds since the last visit, since last month. So therefore, at this time, I do not think the patient is a good candidate for bariatric surgery. And so I immediately said, give me the phone. And my manager at the time says, no, you're not going to pick up the phone, which is probably good because I would have probably regretted what I said and made somebody mad and wouldn't got any more patients from them. But that's not the point. And so I calmed down and I reached out to them a little bit later and I said, look, I just want to have a conversation with you about this particular patient, this letter. And I said, I know this patient well enough, not near as well as you do, but this patient's now on 3 diabetic medications. At some point between 1 and 2 or 2 and 3, there was a reason you added the next one, right? Let's say when you added the third. I'm going to guess their A1C continued to climb. Their blood sugars were not well controlled. And you said, okay, we got to do something about it. I'm also going to guess, because you're a pretty thorough physician, that you probably talked about some dietary changes, modifications. Now, how in depth? Many times it's probably not in depth, but hey, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. So their disease was getting worse. They obviously weren't doing everything that you asked them to do. Why didn't you withhold the medicine? And I got silence. And she said, well, that's unethical to withhold treatment. And I said, you said it, not me. And, you know, there was a little bantering back and forth. And I said, look, just think about it for a second. I'm offering something that gives this patient an 85% chance that this disease can be resolved. Now, I'm not saying cured, but the numbers back to normal. You're offering this patient something that can control this disease. So let's say I'm controlling it, you're controlling it, but my chances are way better than your chances. And I'm supposed to not offer that to them unless all their I's are dotted and their T's are crossed. There's a level of noncompliance that can be dangerous to a patient where a patient looks at you and says, I'm not drinking liquids the first couple of weeks. Okay, well, I can't do this. You will hurt yourself. And I've been there before, some more publicly than others with patients. But, you know, what are we doing here? We're withholding care. And so I think of it that way. And I think that's how you have to talk to people about this, because it's a disease. We all have things. Majority of people who develop lung cancer could have done something different in their life. A lot of people who need coronary artery stents or CABG could have done something different. I've watched patients have coronary artery bypass, continue to smoke. When they come in, we don't say, nope, not bypassing you this time. Your risk of sternal infection and dehiscence is much higher if you're a smoker. Your risk of your vessels closing down again if you're a smoker is much higher. You're, as a surgeon, you're taking that on and saying the chance of my surgery failing is much higher because the patient is noncompliant, but you also know if you don't do something, what's going to happen as well. And so there's a balancing act without question. We have to see some level of compliance, but to hold patients to a standard with this disease differently than any other disease where almost you got to be as close to perfect as possible before I'll actually do the thing that can help the disease. Well, that's why we set this perception for people in the public. where this is 100% self-inflicted, because then the public comes back and says, well, if you do all these things perfectly, you would never need surgery. Well, that's ridiculous. None of us do anything perfect. I promise you, I will sit here and say that I probably, the way that I eat is not much different than some of my patients. But genetically, yes. Are there things that I do from a physical activity standpoint? Are there other things that I do that I can't control? I'm able to tolerate that. And when I check my labs are good. My numbers are good. So I find that happy balance that says, okay, I'm maintaining my health based on my feedback. That doesn't mean it won't change when I get 5 years older or anything else. But I'm not doing everything perfectly. I'm doing things that are working for me. And I think to get people to understand obesity, we have to talk about it as a disease. And that's the first place that we start.
Because obesity is a chronic lifelong disease, right? And,
right.
And once you have it, it's never going away. There is no known cure for obesity.
Right.
Correct? Okay.
Right.
So we can treat it. We can manage it. We can get it to the place where it's not impacting our health at such a great level, right? We can find a healthy baseline, but we are never going to be cured of it. And when we experience these things along our journey, like regain, right, or numbers go up, or right, cravings are back, or all of these things, this is an indicator that our disease is returning, right, and that more treatment is needed. It doesn't mean that we're doing anything wrong as a patient. It's the disease.
Right. So the question is, how do we define disease? How do we define obesity? It's BMI, right? We look at a BMI scale and we say, if you're in this category, you're obese. If you're in this category, you're morbidly obese. Then you're in this category, you're overweight. How is that any different than how we categorize hypertension? Right? There's parameters, there's numbers. Mm-hmm. And if you're above a certain number, you have hypertension. There's lots of causes of hypertension, right? You could have hypertension because you have kidney disease. You could have what we call essential hypertension, which we really don't know why you have it, which is the most common genetically. You know, I know people that are thin, they're not obese, they have hypertension, right? There's some people that have weird things like pheochromocytomas. They have hypertension, but it's caused by a chemical that needs to be treated. But essential hypertension, the most common type of hypertension, it's categorized by a scale or a number, right? You get above this, diabetes. You get above this, you're diabetic. So we categorize obesity in a scale. So why do we not say we cured obesity or morbid obesity if we take you out of that scale, right? Out of that category, we've dropped your number down. That's what our goal is, right? I always tell patients, my goal is not for you to lose weight. My goal is to make you non-obese, because that's when I flatten your curve of dying too early. Mm-hmm. But we don't ever remove a diagnosis from a patient's chart of hypertension if they're put on a pill and their blood pressure is normalized. Because what normalized it? The pill. What else normalized it? Regular follow-up to make sure the pill is dosed appropriately. All the other risk factors are in place, because when we take medicine, we have to monitor other things, right? So this patient who maybe has been placed on a blood pressure pill, made some dietary modifications, made some lifestyle modifications, and they continue to maintain their blood pressure. They took it really serious. They're out exercising, but they're still on a pill and they don't have a normal blood pressure. We don't say you are cured of your hypertension, because we've done a permanent change or fixture on you, i.e. your blood pressure pill and long-term follow-up to make sure your disease is controlled, just like you said. And if we control the disease, then we eliminate the secondary effects of the disease, right? I always say nobody ever died of obesity. They died of the secondary diseases that go along with obesity. So why would we think or expect to cure obesity? I tell my patients all the time, you will have morbid obesity for the rest of your life. The difference is you won't wear it if we do these things. And these things are all of these things, not just your surgery. Changes in your lifestyle to maintain your results, lifelong follow-up to maintain those results. And if we do those things, don't go to your family doc when you're 150 pounds and say, I'm morbidly obese. They might send you for another site consult. But in your mind, mentally, you still have the disease and it has the chance to come back, to reoccur. So we can take that one step further to hit home even harder. And what if you're diagnosed with cancer, right? The C word, oh my gosh, you have cancer. Well, many times that might be surgery. Let's say it's breast cancer and you sit down and you find out, I need surgery, I need chemotherapy, I need radiation. You're not gonna miss those appointments. You're gonna do everything that doctor says. I remember my mom, when she was diagnosed with breast cancer, she heard about the studies, the small associations. Actually, just before she had breast cancer, she had fibrocystic disease. And there's studies that show caffeine could increase fibrocystic disease way back in the day. My mother never touched a drop of caffeine again in her life because she knew that they make her more prone to getting breast cancer and on and on and on. So you follow those rules and your doctor looks at you and says, okay, you are now in remission or you're now cancer free. But they don't say, call me if you need me. They say the data shows, the studies show that if you follow up with your oncologist this how often, you have your mammograms this often, you avoid these certain precipitating factors that increases your risk of breast cancer this often. Those don't stop after a year, after 2 years, for the rest of your life. But if you do these things, the studies say that your chances of your cancer coming back are way down here. You're going to do those things. And there's some people that do those things. And guess what? The disease still comes back. So your disease must have been different and it needs further treatment. So we don't stop and say, that's your one shot. We're not going to treat it anymore, right? Even if you said, I didn't stop the caffeine, or if you're the person with heart disease or lung cancer, I didn't stop smoking. Nope, we're not going to cut it out again. You had your shot. You went back to a bad habit. Shame on you. We're out of money in the healthcare system. That's not how the United States works. You would continue to treat it. So let's right. flip the coin and somebody has bariatric surgery and they lost weight, but they regained for whatever reason. Were there maybe some things that they could have done differently? Sure. But at the end of the day, their BMI is up to a point like, okay, let's see if we, all right, are you on the same page? Are you willing to follow up with me? Yes, you didn't last time. Are you willing to this time? Yes, I am. Okay, why should I not trust you? We might need to revise you. We might need to take you to another surgery. We may need to bridge the gap with medications. That doesn't mean that you failed. Could you have done things differently? Possibly. So let's look at that. What can we do better? But we're not going to withhold treatment. And it's not a one-shot deal because there's no other disease in the world that we give people one shot. And if it doesn't work, you're done. That was your one shot. You ruined it.
Right.
Why we look at that differently, I don't know.
Well, and it's also, you know, we talk a lot about people, you know, when they are freshly post-op and they get down on themselves about, you know, any kind of regain or missing stuff or not hitting the goal that they may want to hit. Like, you're brand new to this. Like, we put it in terms of like being a toddler. If you're 2 months out, you wouldn't be upset with your your 2 month old because he can't walk. Right. He's never done that before. And you've never lived, like I myself at 44 years old when I had surgery, had in 44 years of my life had never lived a healthy life, eating, exercise, any of that. I had never done any of that unless you know, called riding my bike when I was little, but you know, that wasn't like straight, like, it was on purpose. So I didn't know, like when I got sent home with my binder, it's like, here, eat this, you know, 1200 calories a day and call it good. Like, I don't know how to eat 1200 calories healthy. Like, I'll knock that out at breakfast and be done for the day at 1200 right. calories and be like, have it licked. But without the additional knowledge and the adjunct treatments, you know, you shouldn't be upset with yourself because that stuff, you know, that you don't know that stuff because you don't know what you don't know. And if you've right. never lived this way ever before, you can't just expect to have surgery and go, oh, this is pretty cool. I'm just going to be healthy now. And I'm going to love the gym and I'm going to love, you know, vegetables and it's all going to be great. Like, I'm not going to miss cheeseburgers and pizza at all.
Right.
Like, it's that's not how the world works. Like, it's just not, it's not feasible.
No, you have to have that support.
Yeah. And it boils down to when I'm talking to, you know, people in our community, or even just when we have these conversations with professionals like you, it comes down to society views the disease of obesity as a moral thing as a moral standing. Like, well, you're lazy or you don't know how to eat. Obese people are the most educated on how to eat. Let me tell you, right. we know how to eat. but that's what it boils down to, really, is like, and we hear it all the time in the community too. I'm a bad bariatric patient because fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, to Jason's point, to your point, it's like, this is a disease and we don't have that same sense of urgency like we do with the word cancer. I mean, when we hear the word obesity, we should also feel that sense of urgency to remedy it, to treat it. But we don't have that sense of urgency as a society.
Right. And I think we have to, on our standpoint, we have to be able to find that balance to be able to talk about to patients, there are things we need you to do different, but not make it sound like the things that you weren't doing different are why you're here.
Yeah.
The two go hand in hand. Yeah. And so, you know, I think, you know, we have to develop that trust when patients come in and say, look, we have to have honest conversations. We have to talk about, but you know, once you walk through this door, the blame is over, you know,
yes.
The guilt and regret, that means you're living in yesterday and we got to live in today. The anxiety and the angst, that means you're living in tomorrow and we can't do anything about tomorrow unless we change today. Cause today becomes our past. If we're worried about our past and regret, then how about we change our past, which will be tomorrow. Today will be our past, and focus on today. So we're going to get to the nitty gritty and we're going to talk about all the things that we need to do differently, but don't listen to me say that and think he's reminding me of all the things I've not been doing. Well, that's okay. That's okay. That's in the past, but we have to have those conversations, but that's your disease is as such that you need additional treatment. You need treatment in conjunction with behavioral changes. You know, yeah. I literally every week when I have what we call intake, when patients have their very first visit with me, I spoke to a room full of people today. I don't know, 35 people in a room. And I give my little talk. And at the end, I say, the last thing I want to tell you guys is I don't want you sitting here defeated. And some people will kind of look at me and then some people will just kind of put their head down. And it never fails. Like I'll have a room full of people and I'll have at least four or five people tear up, you know? And I say, but here's what I mean by that. Because there's some people in this room, whether you want to admit it or not, they're sitting here thinking, man, it came to this. Like I've battled with this for so many years and it came to this. Mm-hmm. Don't start off feeling defeated. And I can't tell you don't feel defeated and just you don't feel defeated. I'm going to back that up with some facts. And here's the facts of why you shouldn't feel defeated. You all who qualify for weight loss surgery, your chances of diet and exercise alone making you non-obese, not losing 15, 20 pounds, but non-obese and keeping that result for at least a year with any modality you want. I don't care. We can talk about the name brand diets that you can subscribe to, whatever you want. Your chances of success for keeping that result for just 1 year is 1%. You're not the exception, you're the rule. Now, 1% of the population, that's a lot of people's lives that have changed. I'm glad that worked for them. And I'm telling you that that has to be part of your process, but that if you do those things in conjunction with what I can do for you, I take that from 1% to 50% and from 1 year to 5 years. So who would not take 50% over 1%, 5 years over 1 year? And I followed up and say, you notice I didn't say 100. It's not a guarantee. Mm-hmm. And you'll have somebody in your life that'll say 50%. That must mean 50% gained all their weight back. No, I'm talking about non-obese. So the guy who was 500 that gets the 300, who's probably better off, I can't count him. He's not non-obese. And I say that to him at the beginning because I want them to get rid of that guilt. I want them to get rid of that shame because they have a lot of people around them who have insinuated that. And I can't change all those people around them unless they bring them off to talk to me and they still won't change them. But I need them to change. I need them to have that mindset that not I'm ashamed, that I'm relieved, that I'm finally in a place with a lot of hard work. I have the best tool with no comparison to give me the best chance to control my disease.
Yep.
That reminds me, I was just going to say, that reminds me so much of the conversation I had with my surgeon. You know, I've had two prior surgeries that caused complications. I got denied. I tried to go back and get surgery here in the States twice, went through the whole thing twice, two different programs even. And I sat down, talked to my surgeon. I said, this is my story. I need a guarantee that this is going to work. because I was like, I'm not going to go through this again, you know?
Right.
And he just simply said, similar to what you said. And at the end, he just said, we can do this. And just having that said to me in that moment, I felt that sense of relief. And I felt that sense of, like, I don't want to say motivation, but I was motivated to better myself and, like, make those changes. And I did it because I had a surgeon who I trusted, who believed in me, and who knew that it was a disease. And that was.
Yep. Well, I think, wasn't it the Just Be You Awards, Dr. Smith? You gave us a line that is a true gift. You said obesity is a disease, not a decision.
Right.
We've all made decisions in our lives. And just like what you said, there's not a disease out there that does not have a behavioral component to it. Right.
Like, right.
It, there just doesn't exist. So when we factor that into that sentence, it makes it very easy to understand why we all struggled for so long to control and manage this disease on our own. And society and corporations and ads and people told us that it was us, that it was, that we were making a decision that was contributing to that. But that absolutely is not true. And to finally be able to put the words and the phrases and the facts in front of people and change this conversation is going to ensure that more people access the treatment that they need for the disease.
Right.
It takes these conversations. It takes patients. It takes doctors. It takes everybody saying, hey, this is not a me problem. I am going to contribute to bettering myself once I have this primary treatment, because a lot of the things that we did as patients before surgery help us. We were all active, right? I mean, my diet was pretty dang good. It was unprocessed whole foods, right? I was a devoted yogi, 5K. I did a lot of things right. So it's not that everything from our past life is bad. In fact, a lot of us need to rely on some of those things that we did before surgery, after surgery, because they do have to be a part of our treatment plan. But I mean, it just baffles my mind that so many people wait so long to access this treatment, but it's just because of that stigma that's out there around the disease.
Yeah, it's the outside pressure or the stigma or whatever you want to call it. and that's the unfortunate part. And that's where I think we have to find a way to bridge the gap between our primary care providers and surgeons. And I don't know where the problem is. If there's a problem, there's always two sides. You know, it's never one-sided. You know, if there's an argument, it takes two to argue. I was taught as a kid, right? So if we're disagreeing over something, it's on us. So all I can do is try to do my part to reach out to that side and educate. And I'm sure I'm going to learn something from them as well to hear, okay, well, but here's what I hear every time. And here's some of the behaviors. How do I go about that? How do I say, okay, you're going to be ready for this? And maybe they're not understanding how much education we continue with them. You know, maybe their exposure to bariatric surgery was 20 years ago. It's totally different, either the procedure or the follow-up or whatever. But we've all seen, gosh, my surgeon just told me to eat less than 800 calories a day for the rest of my life. I mean, how can you do that? Like, we teach patients body composition. You can continue to eat less and less calories. And as your muscle mass continues to drop, your number to maintain your weight continues to drop. You're basically setting yourself up for guaranteed failure. You know, we want you to eat like you, all three of you all have a different number of calories based on your age, your weight, your sex, and your body composition that you need to sustain where you are and that you need to change your weight. Right. And weight isn't by itself indicative of health. You know, I can take two males that weigh 220 pounds and put them in front of you, and one of them is ripped and should be on a stage, and the other one would qualify for weight loss surgery depending on how tall he is based on his muscle mass and his body fat percentage. So to come out with a recipe and say, okay, come here, have the surgery, come through the assembly line, and you're on your way.
Yeah,
that's what I have a problem with, because we're overlooking. Look, I take great pride in my surgical outcomes. I take great pride in how hard I work to make sure I do the very best job I can do in the operating room. And does that matter? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But to think that that's all that matters is, I'll be honest with you, as a surgeon, it's insulting to have someone insinuate that to a patient, that you just need a good surgery and then good luck. Yeah. Now, you set that person up for long term. You know, if you live in a small community and you have a cancer that's rare, you may go to a university, right? Yeah. And you may have a surgeon who only knows how to do that surgery. Let's say you had some kind of pancreatic cancer or something like that. But they're not just going to send you back to your community and turn you loose. They're either going to have a satellite clinic affiliated with the university for your oncology team that does all the long-term follow-up for you. Or if not, you're going to be hiking it 2 to 3 hours every so often for all your follow-ups. That's non-compromised. They will not compromise that. Yeah. So why are we treating this disease any different? And it's unfortunate, but it happens, and we got to change it.
Yep. Well, I mean, that's literally, it's why we created Berry Nation, right? It was right. The three of us knew. I mean, I was handed a binder. I had one support group that I could attend a month in person. I lived an hour away from my surgical center, and I had to like kind of battle to get my 6 month appointment. I got one phone call for my 1 year, and I never had a 1 year follow-up, and that was it. That was the last time that I've had any contact with my surgical center.
Right.
Right. And like, that's the only reason I've been successful is because of all of you on the screen, because I've connected with you, because I've connected with community and experts and onboarded all of these other treatment plans, because man, I got to that 6 months and I hit that wall, and I hit that wall hard. And it was a real moment of disappointment and anger for me when I realized surgery would not be enough.
Right.
Yeah. And I didn't know what to do. My binder didn't talk about that. My binder said, oh, I need to eat these calories for the rest of my life. Well, I was doing that and I was not having success anymore, right? My disease was reoccurring. Nobody told me I had a disease. Nobody told me that right. This was an indicator that I needed more treatment. Nobody told me what the additional treatment was. It was just, well, what are you doing wrong? Well, you're eating more than you were a week ago. What? Yeah. Are you kidding me?
and the thing is like everybody who gains weight back doesn't necessarily need another surgery.
Yeah.
But there's something in the follow-up that we're missing, right? That connection that we're missing. And, you know, I did a podcast not too long ago, and all these questions were coming in, and it was talking about the myth of pouches stretching and sleeves stretching. And I was like, you know, that really doesn't happen. Like if a pouch is too big, it probably was too big at the beginning. Now, older bypasses, the way they used to make them, they retain some fundus and that could stretch out. That's more scientific than we probably want to get. But if a sleeve is too big 2 years later, it was probably too big at the beginning. And that's not being critical of the surgeon. I don't know what the surgeon saw at that time. But my point is then people would pipe in and say, well, if things don't stretch, then why do people gain weight back? Oh. And I'm like, well, first of all, we have to decide what are we filling the sleeve up with, you know? Mm-hmm. But what is the support for that? Like, are we helping people understand? Maybe someone's not followed up and they're like, I can't figure out how to eat meat. Every time I eat meat, I get sick because I'm comparing how I ate meat with a stomach that's stretched. Yep. So I'm just going to go to slider foods. I'm just going to go to liquids. Maybe I'm having heartburn and I really don't even know, is this normal? Can I treat it? So I eat a lot of things that relieve the heartburn. They tend to be liquids, things that soothe it, sometimes very carbohydrate dense. Everybody's different. And so you all probably heard me say this before, and I know I probably say it so much that everybody that's heard me speak has heard it, but I think it's so true. The three worst words that somebody can say after having surgery, bariatric surgery, is I got this. Mm. It's so dangerous.
Yes.
Because when you say I got this, you say, oh, I fixed it. I got it on my own. And you no longer need the things that you reached out to help you. You know, I always call it the rock bottom. We all have a rock bottom. I've hit it. You guys, I guarantee you have hit it. People have hit it in all varieties of life, whether it be health, whether it be, you know, relationships, addictions, yep. It could be anything. But at the end of the day, when you hit your rock bottom, you seek out help, and that finally starts to make you better. But why in the world would we stop doing the things that made us better? It's no different stopping the blood pressure pill and being shocked. Oh my gosh, my blood pressure went back up.
Yep.
It's a million dollar question, my good man.
Yeah. But we're all human and we make those mistakes, and that's okay. Yep. And my goodness, just because we make a mistake or a second one or a third one, you don't give up on people. You be honest with people, but you don't give up on people because it's a complex disease.
Yep. And I think what is so confounding in the bariatric community is you think you hit rock bottom when you like agree to have surgery, right? Like what you right. said, right? People are like, oh, this is it. It's come to this. I have to have surgery. You think that's your rock bottom. We disagree. Your rock bottom is 6 to 12 months after surgery.
When you see the scale bump back up.
Right. And when you realize, my God, yep, I don't have this, right? When your old habits, your old thoughts, your old mindsets, your old actions come back, you notice that you're craving food or you're eating food or you're eating more or whatever it is. And you realize, oh my God, surgery was not it. And that is that period of time we coined it, because everybody said there was the honeymoon and then there was life and maintenance. And we were like, no. There's this like period where you get smacked upside the head and you don't know what planet you're on, and it's not maintenance, and it sure as hell is not the honeymoon. It's right. the commitment. It's when you absolutely are at the bottom and you realize, oh my God, I either have to commit to do the work of weight loss surgery, which is all of these adjunct treatments that we've been talking about, or I commit to living my life as I did before. Both are right. choices that you can make. Both choices are valid. But if you want to see lasting change in your life, you have to commit to the bariatric life. And you don't know what that is until you're living it. And a lot of times for many of us, we look at that life and we go, I don't want this. I didn't sign up for this. No. I signed up for, he cut out my stomach and I'm going to eat less. I didn't sign up for all this mindset and this movement and this metabolic wellness and all. I didn't know. And I mean, Jason, I'm sorry, I'm going to call you out. You just went through it. You hit bottom. Yeah, you totally 100%. Did.
No, and the funny thing is like I'm hearing you guys talk, and the first time that happened for me that I realized that I was kind of on a boat on my own is when I turned to regular, when they were like, okay, you can eat regular food now, and I was like, oh shit, I was like, it's been training wheels and people yeah. holding me up till now. I was like, and now you're just telling me I'm on my own. I was like, this is a bad place to be, and I realized then automatically I was like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing at all, because I was like, after that I'm like, oh, this is great, everything's cool, go for a couple follow-ups, and then past that I haven't been back since my 3-month follow-up, and they didn't care one way or another. And so I'm like, the only way I've seen my surgeon again is because I went with my wife for her follow-up or for her initial consult, and he didn't even know it was me until I showed him the picture. But the thing about it, like with me, like that was the first time that I realized that I was in a world of hurt. And then once you start kind of going on, and then like the more you, there are kind of stumbling blocks that you come up across. And then it's when the real wall hits it, you have to realize like, oh damn, like I've been doing this all wrong. And the things that I've been putting off and doing, like I had my big aversion to tracking and wasn't going to do that yet. I'm not doing that. I don't care. It's too much time. I don't have time for it. And then I realized, you know, we put in 30, 40 pounds of regain. I'm like, shit, I got to do something. And the, the thing that we all talk about and say all the time is you can't change what you don't track. And for that, it took that to finally click to me. And I was like, well, damn, I guess I can't be out here talking about it if I'm not going to be about it. And so got with a friend of mine, you know, started working on it. But I'm like, it took that, you know, it took that dose of reality for me to realize, like, oh, shit, like I really do have to make some changes because this is going to get bad if I don't. And so those are the kind of the rock bottoms we talk about. And it's not all going to be at one time. You will have other parts where you think are kind of your lowest, but realize that there's other lows out there. It's all about riding, you know, the ebbs and the tides of it all. You gotta think about the things that went right when they were going right. And you have to apply those when they're going wrong.
Right. And, you know, I tell people there's some people that need to track for the rest of their lives. There's some people we encourage everybody to download a tracker that they like just to learn about what they're eating. There's nothing more eye-opening than putting in a food that you thought, I mean, many times when you're non-compliant, it's not intentional. It's not like you're, I'll show him. It's, man, you know, my mom told me this was pretty healthy, or, you know, something like that. And you had no clue what was in it. And when you put it in there,
I was going to say, meet April with our avocados. And we were like, did you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Peanut butter. You know, I had this guy years ago, poor guy. He kept saying, I'm eating tuna. I'm eating tuna. And I'm like, I was like scratching my head. And finally I said, I'm going to go get the dietitian. She comes out and she kind of was chuckling, not making fun of him, but she's like, poor guy, he's eating tuna salad. You know, it's that, you know, as a kid, he was like, don't eat a burger, eat tuna salad. Right. Gallons of mayonnaise, Miracle Whip, you know, all that stuff in there. So, I mean, those are little examples, but you know, we have follow-up, you know, our standard follow-up is 1 week, 1 month, 3 months, 6 month, 9 month, 12 months, every 6 months, the second year, once a year thereafter for the rest of your life. But when I tell patients that, and I'm like, this is my contract with you. Like, I need to make sure you're not getting vitamin deficiencies. And sometimes they have no symptoms until it's too late. So you can't prevent a vitamin deficiency, one, unless you take your vitamins, and two, unless you're getting labs when I tell you you need them. But I say, I have patients who are 8 years out, and they come in every 6 months. Why? Because they say it works. That's the level of accountability they need. So yes, download the trackers early on to learn about the food. Some of you all need that every day. Some of you all may not need that every day. You'll figure out what it is. And I always tell them, look, I'm not going to create a bunch of visits to biopsy your wallet, right? I'm not going to bring you in a bunch just so I can charge your insurance. I'm too busy for that. But you create as many visits as you want with us if this is your place of accountability. What you guys have, that's why it's so amazing and unique for patients, because the accountability can't stop. Mm-hmm. And let's say someone's, you know, subscribing to your service and they think, okay, well, I'm going to subscribe for 6 months and I'm going to be all hot, you know, and ready to go. And then, okay, I think I got this. Like, what do you guys pay every 6 months for your car to insure it? Like, everybody required by law, you're supposed to, at least in Kentucky.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We us required, too. I guarantee you, they do for you all.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, so that's just a small, it could be a very inexpensive car. You're paying couple hundred bucks probably every 6 months to insure your car, because it's so important that you have your car. This is the only vehicle we got. Like, when it's gone, it's gone. And so that level of accountability is such a small investment for a big, big thing that is so valuable. And I can't have the number of support groups that you all do. Right? To be able to, I don't have access to the experts that you all do. That's a full-time job. So trying to get patients to understand that this is like for the rest of your life, and find that level of accountability. The way I talk may not jive with you. It may be great for surgery and everything else, but I think in the past, as surgeons, we've always been so like, oh my gosh, don't go to the internet. You know, I want to control everything. And there's some bad information out there, but there's also some really good information out there. What can we do to improve our level of compliance and follow-up for our patients?
Yep.
Resources like this.
Yeah.
And I think when you try to make it basic like that to people, that they get it. But, you know, it's our job as surgeons to create an environment where it's easy to come back when you're doing good. It's easy to come back and stand in one leg of your pants and take a picture for the website and show how well you've done. That's easy. What's not easy is when you come back and you've put weight on. And it's our job to make it not uncomfortable.
Yep.
You can be honest and empathetic at the same time. And understand that, hey, this is part of the disease. All right, let's put our heads together. Let's figure out what we need. Do we need another surgery? Do we need medicine? Do we need to have that hard talk that, let's be honest about your eating habits? We got to overhaul that, whether it was intentional or unintentional.
Yep. That's why we literally say it every single day. There is no such thing as a bad bariatric patient.
There just is not. We are all learning how to live, manage, and treat a disease that is multifactorial. Like, there are so many things that go into the disease of obesity. And instead of us figuring out necessarily what all those things are, we need to learn how to treat it now. And we have to arm ourselves with the tools to treat it as the disease progresses throughout our life. Because the treatment that I need today is not going to be the treatment that I need in 5 years. It's not going to be the treatment in 10 years. I might need all of this and then some. But if I don't have that, if I don't have a place to go to get the treatment that I need, then yeah, the disease will be back and I will be, you know, left in this devastating situation where once again, I'm thinking that it's something that I'm doing. It's just, it's not true. And if we can really shift people's understanding of, no, you are battling a disease, this disease is going to present in multiple different ways throughout the rest of your life. And that's okay. Here's all of the different things that you can do along the way to treat and manage your disease. And when you're surrounded by a community of people that accept you and your disease for what it is and how it's showing up, you don't feel bad about asking for help because everybody's struggling with the same thing.
Right. Well, and let me take it one step further. You said something about, and thinking it's something that you're doing. It's actually okay to discuss that may play a role in it, but it's in conjunction with a disease, right? There might be something that you're doing, but guess what? That's because you have a disease, and that doesn't mean you have an addiction, because I don't believe everybody who's battles obesity has a food addiction. There's definitely lots of people that are undiagnosed, but it may be I'm making huge changes in my diet compared to in the past, but I don't see the same results as the guy beside me. Mm-hmm. So we're all motivated by results. We're all, when we make changes that don't come natural to us and we don't see results, sometimes you throw your hands up. And so some people may need more help than others. I mean, they may need more intervention than others. Mm-hmm. And like we said earlier, it's no other disease do we just say you get one shot. And if this didn't work, well, then it's a lost cause. I don't stop giving medicines for diabetes just because their A1C goes up. And I don't follow them around and say, if you eat that one thing with sweets in it, see, you're a bad patient. Not going to treat you anymore. You know,
well, yeah. If that was the case, I would have been stuck because all the blood pressure medicines that they've put me on, because I have hypertension and it's so far deep in my family. Like you mentioned earlier, my mom was 115 pounds till the day she died, and her blood pressure was high, like super high. She was on meds. My grandparents, both sides, everywhere. So for me, I've been through so many different generations of different meds and different. You know, they've done the let's raise them up to the umpteenth level till you can't go any higher. So right now I'm on 4 meds and a patch. So had they stopped after the first med didn't work, like I probably wouldn't be here either way. Had surgery, did all this to change my life, and still would have died. So,
and there's patients out there too that maybe they were offered a procedure by a bariatric surgeon that wasn't the optimal procedure for them. You know? The statistics are very clear that the effectiveness of a band or a sleeve or a bypass or a DS or SADI are very different in certain BMI category, certain comorbidities, resolving those comorbidities or keeping those under control. They're very, very different. So now you've got a patient who's got a BMI of 60, goes and gets a sleeve, or maybe 10 years ago went and got a band. They went to have bariatric surgery. And now they didn't lose enough weight. They didn't get down low enough. And they're like, I'm a failure. Well, did you understand? Did your surgeon tell you that your BMI is 60 and a sleeve gives you a 5% chance of becoming non-obese? Now, I have seen plenty of people that become non-obese with a sleeve whose BMI is that high. It doesn't mean I withhold it from them, but it's a conversation I have to have with them if they have other options. And, that's the other funny thing that's kind of on topic, but a little on its own, is the first thing I try to tell patients when I see them the first time is, you know, if you went to a health screening and you found out you had hypertension, you wouldn't go to your doctor when they told you, hey, go see your doctor so you don't have a stroke, and walk in and say, all right, I just found out I have hypertension and Pfizer has this brand new medicine that I saw on TV and the family looks super happy now that dad's on it. And I want that medicine. And everybody laughs at me. And I'm like, no, you wouldn't do that. You would let your doctor tell you which of the hundreds of blood pressure medicines you need. But people do that in bariatric surgery every day. they come in and say, I finally decided I want to have bariatric surgery and I want procedure X, because they knew somebody that had it and their result was really good. But like, you guys are all different. Your comorbidities are different. So let us help educate you on what would be best for you. We can get you to the same goal, but your path may be different to get there. So there's people out there that have gained their weight back. Maybe they did everything right. They were set up with the procedure least likely to help them. I mean, hear what I said. I said 5%. That's not a whole lot more than that 1% of becoming non-obese, right? Mm-hmm. No. So yeah. Now you've got that patient who feels completely defeated, and maybe they were like, their behavior was like 90% on, and they still didn't reach that result.
Yep.
Yeah. My surgeon told me from the get-go, I had a BMI of 58. He told me due to my age and my size that I was too high risk for anything but the sleeve. But I could always come back and get a revision if I didn't feel like I lost enough. And I was like, you got one chance to cut on me. So I'm like, we're not doing this shit
anymore. Right.
So right. I was lucky enough to have like zero complications with the first time. So I'm damn sure not going back now. Like, I'm like,
right.
And the thing was, is I did lose, you know, I did lose a large chunk of what I did. I got way deeper than I thought I was going to.
Sure.
And then now with, you know, gaining some of it back, now that I've kind of, you know, switched the meal plans and been doing tracking and stuff, I'm getting back down again. But I don't think I will reach back down to the weight that I was, not at my lowest, but even my 10% bounce back, I don't even know that I'll get back down to there, even if I'm, now that I'm doing everything that I'm supposed to be doing and nailing. Because I would say I had the surgeon, I would say I'm probably at 80%. I did about 80% of the shit right. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna be real honest there and say that there was a lot there where I just kind of decided to dive off the wagon. So, but with that being said, like, even though that now that I'm back, you know, doing things nailed, got it nailed down the way I'm supposed to, I still don't know that I'm going to reach back down to that one.
Right. Well, and you know, everybody has different goals, what you're trying to accomplish. Some people are like, I don't ever want to be diabetic again, hopefully. So I need to give you the best chance at that. Obviously the goal is to be non-obese, but you'd be surprised how many people come in when I say my goal is for you to be non-obese. They're like, oh, I didn't think about that. Like, I need to get all the way down there. Well, that's when we really impact those numbers, and losing weight is definitely beneficial, but we want to, let's go for it. Let's get the most bang for our buck. But I think revision in so many people's mind, revision's like a double whammy of the stigma, right? I mean, yeah, Natalie, you know, nice. Revision is like the double whammy. And I don't know if you remember this, but this has been some time ago. She posted something and I don't have a censor button, but you know what I'm going to say. Some jerk got on there and like laid into the fact that she'd been revised and all this stuff. And I'll never forget, I was in the office that day. And I very rarely check my social media, like during the office and stuff. And it just popped up and I saw it. And I just was like, and my staff was like, you got 8 rooms full. What are you doing? Who are you texting? I'm like, leave me alone. I'm not texting anybody. I was so pissed. Yeah. But you know that, so you've already fought through this stigma and then you need a revision and then you feel like the double failure. And we have to be sensitive to that. But in saying that, we have to be honest. We have to say, yes, there were certain things that we could have done differently, but all right, are we on the same page? Are we committed? Let's go. And I will say that's the one downside about just the show stuff, is because people have this perception that everybody has to lose a certain amount of weight before they can have surgery. And, you know, that's not the case. We very rarely do that. I need to see people committed in certain circumstances. And that is like big behavioral issues, or that they're, I'm not setting them up for failure, that we've not dealt with some of the psychological issues or some of our inner demons that we all have. So they're not hurt themselves. You know, I can get the surgery done. That's not to make light of, but that's the easy part. It's the after part. I said that at the award show. I'm like, I got the easy job. Yeah. You guys got the hard job, but we need to make that easier for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, Nat, you've been through two revisions now, right? Mm-hmm. And it was monumental for you to get to the place where you are today, but thank God you fought through all that and put yourself first.
Yeah. I mean, I had to. I was 403 pounds, insulin resistant. You know, I had all of the things that, you know, were pinging, and it took a long time. Obviously, I was very young when I had my first, two surgeries. So that was very traumatic. And I had to work through that trauma. And that's why I said earlier in this episode that, you know, the moment my surgeon, my current surgeon said, we can do this, in that just even reassuring tone and confident. I mean, he was like, right, we can do this. That was the moment where I was like, okay, sold. Like I hung up the phone and I put my deposit down, because I knew just from talking to him that we could do this.
Right.
But I was also one of those patients. I had to lose 50 pounds before I was even able to get on the table. And I did it, right? Like, it's like all of those things where you have to sign that contract with your surgeon, but you also have to be able to trust your surgeon. And that's what got me to be able to have this surgery, was I trusted them. And right, I knew that we together could do it. And that was the difference between my first surgeries, because I was on the conveyor belt. I was on the lap band conveyor belt. In 2009, when it was super popular.
Oh yeah.
I was one of those people. So the difference is humongous in my success, in my care, and in my confidence and trust in my surgeon.
Yeah.
Well, and
no, I mean, I've been doing this 17 years, and I've learned a lot as I've gone. I've made tons of mistakes. My perceptions have evolved and grown, and I've become more knowledgeable as we do more. We all fall into those traps. You know, for me to sit here and act like that I've never looked at a patient who regained weight and thought, well, me revising you is not going to help you. You know, gosh, I remember the way I was training when I first came out, if somebody came in and wanted to be considered for a revision, we made it mandatory. They did 6 months of medical weight loss, you know, everybody. No matter what. But gosh, we were taught that by the insurance companies, right? So we would emulate that. Okay, if you can do that, then that will convince us, then we can do this. So anybody out there is watching this, that I took care of them first, you know, couple years of my practice, I will tell you that right now. And I look back on that, I'm like, what is that was wrong. Now, are there certain circumstances that certain people need to do that? Yes, in certain situations, because of certain behaviors, lack of support, all sorts of things, you know, to make sure that they can, especially when you revise, you tend to get more aggressive, right? You tend to get more malabsorptive. And so, gosh, you know, vitamin deficiencies can happen in anybody with bariatric surgery, but there's no doubt you go to bypasses, you go to DSs and SADs, those risks can go up. So if I've got somebody who's not taking their vitamins now, I gotta make sure that they're going to, you know, I've got to protect them to the best that I can. So there are certain situations, but we all make mistakes, every one of us.
I do want to say that I don't blame my past surgeon at all, because I can look back now and see that that was the medical world at the time. Like, sure, that was not necessarily their preference. I don't know.
Right.
But I can look back now and see, oh, that was the time. Like, you know, that was the era, if you will.
Sure.
So I don't blame any my surgeon or anything, but it was a mistake, and that's right.
Sure. Happened. Yeah. Sometimes we don't know that it wasn't right until we can look back on hindsight's 2020. So
of course. Well, and I think it's a Maya Angelou quote, right? When we know better, we do better. And if we don't continue to work hard to understand the disease of obesity and all of the things that contribute to it, and we don't make all of the treatment modalities available to people, then yeah, we are going to be stuck in this never ending, you know, loop of miscare. But I think we're all united behind the disease, or behind this understanding that this is a disease that will require lifelong treatment. Surgery can and should be your first primary treatment, but when your primary treatment is done, you have a lifetime of secondary treatment ahead of you if you want to continue to, you know, to live with the disease in a way that's not going to end your life prematurely.
Right. People lose battles every day to mm-hmm. diseases, every single day. You know, people have multiple surgeries for cancers and it finally bites them. People have multiple treatments for other diseases and it finally overcomes them. And it's the real world, right? Mm-hmm. But when people, just because people lose battles, we don't sit there and say, well, they should have never done it. It was wasted time. They should have never had the first surgery. You know, it is what it is. It was that situation for whatever reason. It didn't work out. Man, if we could guarantee something, you know, then that would be an easy fix. There would be no need for any of us.
Yeah, right.
There would be no discussion. There would be no debate. There would be no reason for education.
Yeah.
So it's no different. And I think that's, you know, really what we're trying to say tonight is we have to normalize this. And as we started, if it's a disease, which most of us with any level of education know that it is, then let's treat it like a disease. And we're not really recreating the wheel here. And some people need more treatment than others. And some people need more aggressive treatment.
Yep. Yep. Well, we are just so thankful that you are here to help educate us and that you are here to help ensure that patients get all of the treatment that they need, the primary treatment that's the best option for them, and all of the secondary treatment that they'll need along the way. It's critically important. And like what we've been saying this entire episode, obesity is a lifelong chronic disease. There is no cure for obesity. We can manage it. We can onboard treatments that help us live with it and that will, you know, increases our chances that, you know, the diseases that come with obesity will not end our life early, but we have it for the rest of our lives. And if we are not cognizant of that, if we are not engaged in our treatment for the rest of our lives, the disease will come back. And we don't want that to happen to anybody. All three of us have experienced regain. We've seen a reoccurrence of our disease, and we are not willing to sit back and go, well, I tried the one thing. I guess that's not going to work, because our lives and our future are worth more than that to us. So it's just so awesome that we are all united together to make sure that patients get exactly what they need, because we deserve it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. You do. Everybody does.
Yep. Dr. Smith, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We know how busy you are, and to get a few hours of your time is just extremely valuable to us. So thank you so very much.
You're very welcome.
Where can people follow you?
They can follow me on Instagram. I did just notice, I guess I didn't even tell you the right one. It's actually at Dr. Eric Smith _, but it's the word doctor.
Oh,
That's how well I know my handle.
That's how well I know your handle.
Yeah.
We'll fix it.
That's fine. At Dr. Yeah. Eric Smith _. Follow me there. Our website is KentuckyBariatricInstitute.com to kind of find out about, you know, some of the stuff that we offer as a practice. I do have some stuff on YouTube. A lot of it is more of the teaching that I do for other surgeons, but there's some surgeries and stuff on there. If people want to see cool surgeries, you can get on there and see that as well.
Oh yeah.
If they want to watch the show, they can watch TLC. I am on 1,000-pound Sisters. I'm part of the surgery part. I'm part of the medical part. They're great folks. You know, I will say this about it, you know, reality TV is reality TV. But man, we all got our skeletons. We all got our stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think if anything, it can make people aware of everybody has their own struggles to get from point A to point B. And some may be more dramatic than others. And it's easy for us to sit there and say, oh my gosh, what are they doing? What are they thinking? And sometimes we're able to just do that in the house and nobody see it. And sometimes we do it in front of everybody. But my hope on that is at least the part that I control, I can at least help show people how they deserve to be treated, even when they are struggling, good or bad.
I will say I have been following along and I am loving the sense of advocacy for the bariatric community. And that is what I think people can really take from the show and from watching. Right. So mm-hmm. that alone is huge in itself. So,
yep. Well, I appreciate that. I think this season is going to be, I think people, even if they haven't watched in the past, to watch Chris's evolvement, who had surgery last season, and kind of see some of the accomplishments and the ups and downs for him. And obviously Tammy has had a lot of struggles, and I think people will be excited to kind of see some of the progress that we'll make. But I appreciate you saying that, because that is the main thing that I feel like I'm just me on there. And I hope that people can see that they deserve that. You know,
yep.
I remember one time somebody said, I wish you would hold her accountable. And I try not to read social media about it. And I thought, you want me to hold her accountable by like yelling at her and being mean to her and cutting her off. I am holding her accountable. I don't give her something that she wants if she's not ready for it yet. But holding people accountable doesn't mean you give up on them and you quit on them. And if that means I'm not holding them accountable, I'll keep not holding people accountable.
Well, that's one of the one things when we very first talked to you and you told us about the show, because everybody's going to think, you know, whatever they think about people being on reality TV shows.
Right, exactly.
But you were one of the first people to actually say, I'm not going to do the show if I can't do it the way I want to do it. I'm not going to be somebody right. that I'm not just to sensationalize your TV show. Right. And that's what really hit home with all of us, because we kind of did the same thing. You know, we kind of are of the same vein in what we've started. And so to have you align in that way, not only with the way you care for your patients, but the morals that you stand on and say, I'm not going to act like somebody different just because society thinks that I should. That was right. monumental for us and us mm-hmm. wanting to kind of do more with you. So we appreciate sure. you for being that upfront and honest.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, thank you for saying that.
Yep. You are able to recognize and acknowledge everyone's humanity, no matter where they're at their darkest moments, at their highest peaks, right? You are able to give them space to just be who they are. And it does take a lot of bravery to so publicly share such an intimate struggle. So while, that's her story. In a lot of ways, it's the story of all of us. We all struggle in very similar ways when it comes to the disease of obesity. And, you know, to just have it be shown and known, and then to show the world that surgeons like you do exist, and that you are a growing trend, not a shrinking trend, is what is paramount. I mean, I remember Grady and I were just watching one of the most recent episodes, and before he met you in person, he was like, he can't be like that in real life. And I was like, no, he is. This is who he is in real life. Like, you'll see, you'll meet him. And I just remember afterwards, he was like, oh my God, he like really cares. Yeah, duh. Yes, he does. He really does care. Yeah. And you know, again, like, you have to meet people where they're at. You can't hope that they're a different place. You have to meet them where they're at, and you have to acknowledge that even though you're struggling, you still deserve my attention and my love and my energy, because I'm here to help you.
Right.
That's all that people want to know. And I think as somebody who suffers from the disease of obesity, you think you're not worthy of that. You think that your size like somehow takes you out of that equation to be considered a part of humanity. And that's just not the case. And it's just so refreshing to see how you were able to engage so many people where they're at and to truly help them in ways that are meaningful for them.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you saying that. That's how I feel. And that's what I want to get across. You know, I don't think that you give up on people. You have to hold them accountable for the things that they need to do, but that's not giving up on them. You know, I think that's unfortunately the patients that I take care of, they felt like a lot of people have done that to them. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. healthcare providers have done that for them, done that to mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. So we can hold people accountable, but still care about them and still provide support for them.
Yep.
And I think that, you know, you said that, Natalie, you said that earlier about all you needed to do is hear your surgeon say, we can do this. I mean, just simple words for you to be like, oh gosh, you know, I can do this. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what those words may be, you know? And so you just keep being there and hopefully they reach that, you know, the whole rock bottom thing. I always say, you can't push people into their rock bottom. Can't scare them into it. Can't mm-hmm. say things that scare them to change. They got to hit it on their own. And sometimes that can be really ugly. And sometimes it, unfortunately, can be too late. But you just wait. When they do hit it on your own, you're there to help them and help them out of that, however you best can.
Yep. Well, and you know, our tagline, which Jason will say here just in a few minutes, but we really kind of came up with it because if we can support people through the highs and the lows, then right, we can do it. We can do it together. But it's not us just saying, well, you've got this. No. It's you've got this and we've got you. So when we don't have it, exactly. Right. When you don't have it, we are here to help and vice versa, right? There are going to be times along this journey where, okay, I have a good understanding of this and I can move forward with confidence. And then there's going to be the time where you hit that wall and everything goes dark and you don't know where to turn. And if you don't have a safe, welcoming, inclusive place to go and get what you need, yeah, it's going to be a real rough journey for you. We don't want anyone to ever feel alone along the journey. This journey was not designed to be done alone. It's not supposed to be done alone. Obesity is an isolating disease. And if we want to treat it, if we want to beat it and to learn to live with it, we have to do the opposite. So we have to stop isolating. We have to connect with others. We have to connect with resources. We have to admit that I don't know how to do this, but I'm going to learn and these people can help me. That's the whole goal in this, the whole goal.
Support is paramount for long-term success and follow-up is paramount for long-term success. And I promise you, there's no one out there who's had long-term success with bariatric surgery that hasn't had that. Now, mm-hmm. that doesn't mean every single person in the world is a member of Bari Nation. Because there might be somebody out there who I can think of a patient right offhand who she had results. She gained a little bit of weight back. It made her come back. She got back down to where she was. She started getting confidence. Her husband changed the way that he ate and exercised and they lived their life. And that became her support. Yeah. And I could show you pictures of her before and after. And she's as Instagram, whatever you want, you know, but that's not what it's about. She's a great example of her support was her support. She found it. She still has her annual follow-ups with us, but she is so on top of it because she found her community. And for her, it ended up being at home. That's okay. But for many people, they don't have that. And so this provides what you guys do, provide a platform for people to any resource that you need, it's right there. And there may be some people that need that for the rest of their life. And that may be for some people, they may meet someone else in your community and then they become each other's support. We all just want people to have the longevity of success and health. You want that so bad for people. Not only do they deserve it, but you know, when they taste it and they experience it over time, they don't ever want to turn it loose. And if it starts to go away, it will drive them to go back.
We say it all the time. Bari Nation might not be the right place for you, but it's our mission to connect you or to introduce you to what is right for you. That is our number one, right? It doesn't matter where or how you get this support, but this is what you're going to need. And let's help you find it. Might not be with us. That's all good. We just want you to be happy and healthy and really take in what you need to live with this disease. Goal number one. And we'll get there.
Oh yeah.
One patient at a time. We'll get there.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, Dr. Smith, thank you again so much for joining us. We so appreciate your time and your expertise and your insight. It really does mean the world to us.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
Jason, my friend, want to take us out?
Yes, ma'am. We just want to thank the community, because without you guys, we wouldn't be here. You guys have helped us just as much as we've ever helped you. We appreciate you, you know, the likes, the shares, the follows, the subscribes, and telling friends to tell friends that we're here, because, you know, we need everybody from every corner of the internet to know we exist, because that's how we help the next person. So we thank you guys for continuing to help us to do that. And just remember, at the end of the day, you've got this, we've got you, and we'll see you next time.
Awesome. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
See ya.